freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
On Seattle Sports.
Are we going to accuse you of manager?
That really worked that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Hi, Dave. Good morning. Hi, everybody. Hello. It is Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, SeattleSports.com. Seattle Sports app, podcast platforms. Gosh, we just feel ubiquitous. We're everywhere like the great white whale. It's good to be with you guys today on a Thursday, which is going to end up being a beautiful Thursday as well. Weather's great, which is awesome. Just kind of a nice little surprise, sweet spring day. Very cool.
Nothing to watch on TV, so you might as well go outside.
Right. Going to find a way out there as well. And Justin, I see you're decked head to toe in your satin today, which is great.
Head
Love
to toe.
It.
It's just a jacket.
Same thing. Your toes are right below your waist.
Yeah, that's
right?
True. Yeah. Where your toes it is. Yeah, it's pretty nice. I like it.
Yeah, you've gone sauna.
Well, it's not quite satin.
No?
I don't think.
What
I don't
is
know.
It?
I don't know.
Like it's a fake satin.
It's a Mitchell and Ness white Seattle Supersonics jersey, and I was thinking it was satin. It's kind of a different feel to it.
I'm glad you're wearing a Supersonics jersey or jacket in this case today.
Yeah.
We're gonna talk about them a little bit.
Oh.
They are on the docket for today.
All right.
They are on the docket for today.
Docket. I'll be ready.
We will be talking about it. Yes. If you were a bailiff, I would make you call the docket or maybe the clerk. Who calls that? Is that the clerk? The court clerk?
Which, I don't know.
It probably is. I think that's TV. What I think. I think that's what I need you to do. Like Mac on Night Court. Very timely reference. For
quick Google. I still don't know.
People who are under the age of, 50? All right. You also had a big day yesterday. I wanted to start there.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly because I don't want to talk that much about the Mariner game. Like, what happened? Mitch Haniger couldn't play defense, which is, like, you know, not wholly unexpected.
A tough day for the whole outfield.
On a tough day. Let me get there so I don't sound like a jerk.
Yep.
On a tough day for the outfield, it cost them a run or four, and they end up losing, and that was sort of it. But you had quite the day.
Well, I had a week last week that we didn't mention on there because I don't really want to. It's frustrating. You don't want to talk about it.
You were as
like
upset as I've ever seen you.
It's pretty.
You don't
pretty
get
upset
very often.
Yeah, I was pretty upset. We, by we, Betsy and I had a break-in, a storage unit break-in, and some things were taken, and among them, my new PXG golf clubs that I was really, really excited about. That are custom that you would go get fitted for, and that they're right.
What'd you use them four times?
I barely got to use them. That's the worst part.
Less than a handful.
Yes, yeah. I mean I would once a week we were going to the driving range and playing the Topgolf Tracer stuff, but like really didn't even get to use them. I was busy all last summer. We were doing a lot of Mariner stuff, and I was looking forward to this weekend of all weekends. By the way, is a golf trip that I wasn't going to be able to play on. So yesterday, or I should say the night before, I got a phone call from a King County Sheriff detective. Detective Riley Michael Bust. Great name.
His last name is Bust. Stop it.
I know.
That's not true.
Fantastic.
You're lying.
Nope.
There's no way the detective who found your clubs has the word Bust
in his last name. Get a call. Hey, I was investigating a separate burglary of golf clubs.
Yeah.
And was running some information, came across a set of PXGs that might be yours. Sent a photo. I was like, I think that those could be it. Mm-hmm. And went and identified them. And bingo, bango, Detective Riley Michael Bus saves the day.
That's pretty amazing.
And yeah, shout out to the King County Sheriff for getting that all sorted out.
The most amazing part of that story, first of all, finding anything after it's been stolen is amazing.
Not a chance. We were already going through, insurance processes and stuff. So I was like, there's no chance I'm seeing these clubs again. Not only did I find them again, they were in the exact perfect
right. Perfect condition.
Perfect condition.
The person who stole them, obviously not a golfer. So
not a golfer.
Right. It wasn't for his own personal use.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Well, so that's your first win in this whole thing.
Massive.
I think the most amazing thing, you didn't tell me this originally, I just got this part of the story, is that he wasn't even investigating your robbery.
Yeah, it was a different one.
And it just like he what had enough cross-referencing in the computer to figure that out?
Because it was a different golf club. Theft.
Wow.
And
maybe he's onto a whole ring.
Possibly, but the other golf clubs didn't have one identifying thing in the picture. And he's like, I'm just going to do a check and see if there's any others that were taken that do identify or that do look like the ones in this photo.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. So, man, I don't know how and what good karma was working, but wow. Thank you, Detective Riley Michael Buskey, County Sheriff.
I can't believe his last name is Bus.
Yeah, I know. It's perfect.
It's just awesome. All right, well, perfect. Congratulations,
thank
buddy.
You. You guys clubs are back.
That's good. So are you going to play this weekend?
I probably should.
You probably have to, don't you think?
The only reason I feel bad is because this is a bachelor party golf weekend. Reservations, pairings, match, everything was made and done well in advance.
Uh-huh.
So me showing up the day before, I mean, like, hey, never mind, I want to play now. I feel a little bummed, but I'll do what I can.
Dude, aren't you the man of the year in this group? Being man of the year doesn't give
there's
you
only
the,
a few from the man of the year
Justin,
group that are in this bachelor
if being
party.
Man of the year doesn't give you carte blanche to at least say, hey, can I jump in late here? Would you mind?
Yeah.
I don't even know what the point of the award is.
I'm assuming that I will be playing.
Yeah.
All yeah. Right. I mean, it was all a whirlwind yesterday. So there's a lot going on. I was very excited.
Yep.
And,
a lot of texts coming
huge,
in on this.
Huge thank you.
Justin has great karma. Yes, I would agree. What, you couldn't have still gone but just rented clubs?
That was an option for sure. I didn't really tell
you guys.
Any
don't
guys
know Justin.
Either.
If you think Justin could have done that, you don't know Justin. Justin's like my mom. She doesn't want to be intrusive, and neither does Justin. Justin doesn't want to intrude.
Totally.
He wants to be as unobtrusive as possible. And like my mom, sometimes trying to be unobtrusive makes you more obtrusive. Would you like an example?
Okay. Yep.
My as you may remember, both my mother and mother-in-law were at my house last weekend and stayed for a few days, which is great. My mom stayed in the guest bedroom, and my mother-in-law used one of the kids' bedrooms. They slept elsewhere. One of them slept elsewhere. So my mom slept in the guest bedroom, and at the end of her 3 or 4 days, whatever it was, you know, most people would strip the bed and then kind of, or maybe, you know, just say, hey, we didn't have time, to whatever the case might be.
Yeah, yeah,
not
yeah.
My mom. My mom says, well, just so you know, I slept on top of the sheets, between the sheets and the comforter, so you don't need to strip the bed if you don't want to. Now, a couple of things you should know. My mother-in-law is coming back today, as a matter of fact, and she's going to be staying in that same bed.
Uh-huh.
So there's going to be another person in that bed soon.
Yeah.
Also, the worst thing about changing sheets, if you ask anybody who changes sheets on the regular, it's not the fitted sheet, because that just, you know, you put it on.
It's the duvet
not,
cover.
It's not the flat sheet. It's the freaking duvet cover. And especially in our guest bedroom, where the duvet cover has like a maybe 2.5 foot slot for the duvet to go in, and then it has to spread back out. It's like hell. It's like an alternate version of hell. But when you sleep on top of the flat sheet under the duvet cover, guess what you have to do?
Gotta wash the duvet cover.
We gotta wash the duvet cover. If she had just gone under the flat sheet like any other human who was using our guest bed, we could have washed the sheets, left the duvet cover, and moved on with our life.
Yep.
But in my mom's desire to be unobtrusive.
And do your best to not inconvenience people, which I definitely can relate to.
She significantly inconvenienced us more.
Oh, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is, significantly inconveniencing my friends more by not playing.
Yeah.
And
also by originally trying to not inconvenience them and being sort of generally grumpy about your golf clubs. Now here you are in a spot where no matter what you do, you've inconvenienced somebody. So I hope you're happy.
Okay. I'm inconvenient. I'm inconvenient.
I hope you're happy
Nailed
with
it.
That, Justin.
Nailed it.
All right. Speaking of being inconvenienced, we all were yesterday as the Mariners decided that, day games are not for them. It's just not for them. You want to play Wednesday at home? It's not for us. You guys go do your thing. We'll wait for Friday or whatever the case may be. You play your Wednesday games. They're just not for us. We'll tell you more about it next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, I think we always knew it was going to be tough to sweep a team like the Braves, but Mariners did give it a go yesterday. Unfortunately, a costly error. Some more weak, untimely offense, I guess you would say, got in the way. The error on Mitch Haniger, dropped a foul ball, led to a 4-run inning. It stinks, and it does kind of continue the trend of problematic defense that was somewhat predictable to start this year, but he handled it really well afterwards, took full responsibility, full accountability, said it was on him, said he screwed it up, said it wasn't the sun or the wind or anything else. He just messed it up, and he's got to do better. And I think that's one of the main reasons why everybody loves Mitch as much as they do. Scott Servais, after the game, noting that, yeah, it was a problem.
Yeah, when you give, you know, we say here all the time around here, 27 outs, no more. We gave him more than 27 outs today, and that was ultimately decided the game in that one inning. They were able to put big two-out hits together. You know, we had two outs, men on second, base hit, big triple off the wall, and that was the game, you know, in that inning. So, again, you got to play clean to beat good teams. And, you know, we weren't able to overcome that with enough offense today.
Yeah, they're probably not going to beat the Braves if they don't play pretty clean. We saw them kind of get away with it a little bit the night before in the eighth inning, thanks to some tremendous pitching to get out of it by Andrés Muñoz. But other than that, like, you're just not going to beat a team like that very often. And by the way, they didn't pitch nearly well as they have either. Emerson Hancock, good, not great.
He wasn't as sharp. And I think the thing that's been that stood out for me with Emerson and his time in the big leagues is that he, when he pitches well, he is in control of the count. He gets ahead in the count. He's on the attack. And today it wasn't quite as sharp early in counts. You know, he saw a couple walks early. He was able to work through it there in the first inning. But, you know, I think he's learning. He's a young pitcher. Days like today, you do learn. You say all that, and again, just too many free bases today ultimately is what got us.
Well, and so he doesn't make it too many innings, just a couple of innings pitched for Emerson Hancock yesterday. But because all of those runs were unearned, their streak of starters not giving up more than two earned runs in a game continues and is now actually at, what, 19?
Here, 20.
Very, very strange. Anyway, day off today. Then they head back to Texas, this time to see the floundering Astros in Houston. I am curious to see whether this Astros team is as bad as their record says that they are. They're 10-20. You realize that puts them on pace to lose 109 games? The Astros.
Yeah, yep.
They're on pace to lose 109 games. Now, here's the thing. Their bats have actually been okay.
It's just swept.
Right. Like, it's been the pitching that has just been terrible. So is this what the Mariners finally need to break out a little bit and start to see some of their offense come to life? We'll see. It's a good hitter's ballpark. The weather won't be a factor. Their pitching is struggling. This is one of those kind of do or die times for just their offense, just to see if they're capable of doing what they need to do this year.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Speaking of the Mariners, they did announce yesterday the addition of Microsoft president and co-chair Brad Smith and his family to their ownership group. Is this big news? No. I'm here to tell you that it is not. This is most likely a non-story for anyone who's not directly related to Brad Smith or maybe already a part of this ownership group. That's a pretty limited number of people. So for you out there, this story probably means nothing. My understanding is he bought in for basically a small minority share. It's not going to affect much of anything. This is not, as many people had wondered right off the bat, an infusion of cash. This is not a precursor to a big change or a sale or anything like that. This is just a small addition to the group. It was done via an internal transfer, which means it's likely a couple of the other smaller minority owners also selling a few of their shares to bring in another person in the same vein. This is not big news, but I'm here to tell you about it in case you might hear from somebody else who thinks it is big news. I heard about it yesterday from my mother, the very unobtrusive Jane Salk, who told me about this. And then I did a little digging and research and found out, no, this is not big news. But there you go. That's something you need to know.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
This is going to be big news. It's not quite there yet, but it is not too far away. Justin, you're wearing your Sonics shirt or jacket today. The NBA media rights deal is gaining steam, which means we should be hearing about a new signed media rights deal very shortly. It sounds like NBC is getting back into the mix, which means we should get the return of Round Ball Rock, the NBA on NBC theme, John Tesh's great creation. Amazon is going to be in it, and ESPN looks like will continue as a partner as well. Why is this important to you? Well, once that deal is done, the next thing to happen is that we will hear about expansion to Seattle and Vegas. It will happen sooner than later, and Seattle will be one of the teams. It will be one of the teams.
Perfect day for me to wear this jacket.
That's not a report. That's just me telling you what I believe to be the case based on the 9,000 different people in the know that I've talked to about this. I would bet a lot of money, too, that the Kraken ownership group is going to be involved. Remember, primary owner David Bonnerman has already been vetted by the league as a minority owner of the Celtics. Andy Jassy is another member of that ownership group. He is connected now to the league through this Amazon deal, so they own the building. This just seems like a sure thing, so... Heads up, that is coming soon to a Climate Pledge Arena near you. That is everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. We've been talking about this since, like, forever, right? Like, when will this happen? This is one of the first stories that Brock and I talked about when we started this show 15 years ago. Because remember, we started the show in April of 09. The Sonics left in 08. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was like the first year that Seattle didn't have a basketball team. And at the time, you know, I remember doing, you know, bits and questions and caller segments and stuff. We're like, hey, if the, you know, will you watch the NBA? No, absolutely not. I hate the NBA. David Stern's the worst. I mean, like, you know, just some of the really raw, the anger was at its most raw then. Not that it's not still present, but at the time, I mean, it was like a fresh open wound. And every time anything happened, it was like you were just squeezing lemon juice right in. I mean, people were really furious and for good reason, by the way, no judgment. You should have been. And it's like, no, I get it. And you know, we'd ask questions like, okay, will you root for Portland? No. Will you root for Oklahoma City? We didn't even know at the time. Obviously, you know, with the benefit of 15 years of hindsight, now you know that no one here was going to do that ever. But no, we're not going to root for Oklahoma City. Are you going to? And it just kind of went on and on and on. And, you know, we certainly just, okay, nobody wants to talk about the NBA. So we stopped doing it basically entirely. During that time, I completely lost my interest in the sport basically in general, to the point where men's basketball does not interest me at all. I don't watch the NBA. I don't care about these stupid playoffs right now. Even college basketball's lost a lot of its luster for me. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where this town is at when the Sonics return and what or when a basketball, I assume it'll be quote unquote the Sonics, but when the NBA returns here to Seattle, which I think it's going to do very soon, you know, then what? For everybody that abandoned the sport at the time, how many come back? I'm guessing a lot of them. For everybody who's just sort of missed out on the last decade and a half of NBA basketball, what will you think of the product when you get back to it? Because it will not be the same as when you left. I am curious to see kind of how this goes, not just from the Seattle deserves it element, which it does. Seattle deserves to have its fourth major professional sport team back. And this is will be a complete sports town again, and add in the Storm and add in the Sounders and add in, you know, some of the other teams here looking for relevancy, the Orcas and the there's a couple of others anyway.
Yeah.
What's the rugby team? The Seawolves. Thank you. Yeah. And the rain and everybody else that's here in Seattle. But it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So it'll be an interesting, like, hey, text message coming in. I hope the NBA doesn't come back. The NBA is a terrible product. I will be back, but man, has it ever changed. I'm in the same boat. Basketball was my favorite sport to watch, and that has changed so much ever since. Yeah, I get it. I don't know what this will look like. There's going to be a fervor. There's a huge group of people for whom this is going to be the biggest deal. I'm curious about whether or not that kind of lasts and how it looks once people see the product. And oh, by the way, if you're the Kraken, yeah, the ownership group's going to be the same, but they're looking at this going, that's another, you know, competing interest in the Seattle sports landscape. Yeah, yeah, for advertising dollars. So it's going to be an interesting story. We'll keep following it for you. But remember, that media rights deal is the first step in this process. Once it gets done, then the next step is probably going to be for the league to announce its expansion plans. All right, coming up, we had a good talk yesterday with one of our favorites, Aaron Goldsmith. He always brings an interesting perspective. But stick around specifically for his story on the breakout Mariner of 2024 so far. It's next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Brock and Salk's Rewind is presented by Toyota of Kirkland.
All right, Aaron Goldsmith going to join us here in just a moment or two. T
team's on a nice little run here, man. And it is a good lesson on why we talk about it being early and Scott being patient. And guess what? It's still early now. It's why we're not talking about this as being a surefire playoff team. It means they're playing good ball right now after playing some lousy ball to start the season. We'll see where it goes from here. Aaron's seen quite a bit of it, and he joins us right now. Good morning, Mr. Goldsmith. How are you?
Hey, good morning, fellas. Doing well. How about yourself?
We're doing great. It's fun when a team plays like this and just you kind of wake up day after day knowing that the starting pitching is going to give you a shot to win a game. What's it like calling games like this day after day?
Well, you start to form some pretty unrealistic expectations if you're not careful. I mean, it's like nothing I've ever seen before. It's like nothing no Mariner fan has ever seen, at least in franchise history. Maybe you've seen it from afar with another team. But it is remarkable. And I think we all need to realize what we're watching is truly once in a lifetime for all of us. I mean, it certainly hasn't happened to date until now. And to really appreciate it, enjoy it while it's happening, this is an elite pitching staff, even if they hadn't gone on this type of run, and they will continue to be great whenever this current stretch is over with. But what they're doing right now is truly exceptional and like something that the game has really kind of rarely seen in its history.
Do you have a favorite in there, a favorite performance, a favorite moment, a favorite inning or anything like that, that just really jumped out to you from these last 18 games?
Absolutely. I thought George Kirby's first inning in his most recent start against Arizona was the single most dominant inning by a Mariners pitcher this year. When you can rear back and throw gas right over the plate and have not the bottom of the order, the top of the order, not be able to catch up to it and just throw heater after heater after heater. And it wasn't like the Kirby version where we see him dot the edges and guys take pitches they think they hope might be called a ball just a touch off the plate. He was right over the dish. I mean, nearly center cut with the best fastball we've seen from him this year. And the numbers bore it out, right? I mean, he ended up striking out a career high 12. He had more swing and miss on his four-seam fastball that day than any pitcher in baseball has on that pitch year-to-date. It was electric, and it just kind of goes to show you, even from a pitching standpoint, it does take a little bit of time. We hadn't seen that type of giddy-up on his fastball at that point until that start, and guys are now getting through the rotation four or five times and starting to loosen up a little bit more, even though the weather isn't always great. And that, to me, was the single most dominant inning by a Mariner starter this year.
Aaron, what are some of the things your broadcast peers say when they come into town, come into a series? You know, I'm just kind of curious, either play-by-play or the color guys that you guys bump into and the food line and around the batting cages, what do they have to say about this staff?
You know, I was talking last night with CJ Nikowski, who is the analyst on TV for the Braves. He had been the analyst with the Rangers for some time before that, so he's very familiar with watching the Mariners in this recent run of pitching over the last few years. And CJ is a former big league pitcher, was a former first round draft pick, had a nice career in the big leagues. And I asked him, what comes to mind when you think about Mariners pitching in this recent years of whatever it might be, 3 year stretch run? And he said, well, the most obvious thing is just their ability to throw strikes, which seems like this very obvious thing, right? I think the casual fan, if you're talking about a major league pitcher, a big league pitcher, well, of course they can throw strikes. That's the name of the game. But as he put it, that was a challenge for him in his career. And it sounds simple, and it's much harder in actuality. And the way that the Mariners weaponize their pitchers with confidence to say, just throw it over the plate, let it move, and know that the odds are in your favor. And the Mariners' abilities, whether it's you're talking about a starting pitcher or a reliever, to get ahead has been pretty amazing this year. And that's coming from an organization where we've seen like kind of historic success in that department in recent years. The Mariners pride themselves on the 0-0 pitch, so the first pitch of an at-bat, and the 1-1. When you win the 0-0 and you win the 1-1, things shift in your favor dramatically, and that's what we've seen this year.
It's interesting, the question you focused on with the Kirby answer, which I would completely agree with. You could probably do that for each of the pitchers and try to come up with a moment. And the one that has stuck out to me, and maybe it's even two, were the last two times out, Luis Castillo, after I think the first time it was five, this time it was six, like, do you want to use him for one more? He's up in and around 90 pitches. Do you want to give him another inning? Both times Scott did, and both times he was so economical with that final inning to just be like, yeah, I'm going to make it through another inning. That's just what I do. It strikes me that that is a whole nother gear that comes with age and experience for some of these pitchers.
Yeah, yes, you bring that up. And last night, Gary and I, when we went to break after the bottom of the sixth, and you know, Scott had Stanek and he had Spire warming up. So he's got his leverage arms rolling and ready to go if need be. And here comes Castillo trotting back out there. And I'm looking up his season high, which was in the neighborhood of like 104 pitches. And I think he was right around 90 at that point. And you're thinking, okay, like he could have a three batter, 10 pitch inning, get to call it 100 pitches and hang zeros over seven. And that's exactly what he did. And I do think there's something, some intangible that you can't measure to a guy who's been around, who has the hardware like Castillo and has the supreme confidence that they just smell the finish line. And to me, I always kind of acknowledge that when I see guys, when you know it's their last couple of batters, maybe even their last batter, yeah. When you see their velo spike at the very end, you know, maybe they've been sitting 95 for the last few innings, then all of a sudden you see a 96 or a 97 pop. But they know that they're right there. They're going to empty the tank with everything they have. And we saw it from Castillo again last night. The ability to finish is something, one of those probably numerous qualities that defines an ace, and Castillo certainly has that.
Yeah, Brock, as a sprinter myself, I totally understand that. And when you get kind of, when you start to smell the finish line in a race, that's when you start to really turn things on. And you got to be careful because you don't want to, you know, get hurt during those moments.
Sure.
But as a sprinter myself, I totally get what Aaron's talking about.
I think every sprinter out there does. I think they totally get that. Hey, Aaron, is there a tangible or intangible measurement for Cal's role with all of this pitching?
Well, first of all, there isn't a wheelchair waiting at the dugout steps for Castillo like there is for Salt.
Oh, my poor hamstring. It's so sad.
It is very sad. You know, I was thinking about that the other day because it's another thing that you can't measure, right? Cal's impact on this pitching staff. But you can't tell me that a pitching staff that has been among the very elite, not just this year, but for some time, but clearly we're seeing even a special version of it currently. You can't tell me that the guy behind the plate doesn't have an impact on that. And I don't think either one of you are trying to make that case. You're making the opposite. And I agree with that. His ability to instill the confidence, to stick with the game plan, which is really, it sounds like an easy thing. Like, hey, Brock, okay, pitcher and catcher meeting, let's go over things. This is the game plan. You would think it'd be easy just to, okay, well, this is what we talked about, so this is what we're going to do. But the ability to stick with that and execute it is something that is valued highly by Mariners. There's a lot of manpower that goes into that. And then I would say, conversely to that, I mean, take Kirby's outing the other night. His fastball was alive. You know, was it their plan for him to throw nothing but heaters, or Bryce Miller, who threw nothing but fastballs in the first inning the other night? Like, I don't think that was the plan. My guess. I don't know. That's my guess. But based on what Cal saw, it's like, you know, we're going to stick with this. We're going to ride the hot hand until they prove otherwise. He's very mature beyond his years. We know his value to the coaching staff and the pitching staff, but it's not something you can put on a spreadsheet. So it's harder to quantify. But he's an integral part in what the Mariners are doing up on the mound. There's no question.
Little chat with Aaron Goldsmith here this morning. On the other side of things is this offense that it hasn't been terrible, but it certainly hasn't been what it's supposed to be. It's kind of surviving. And you and I have talked about this both on and off the air, right? In terms of, hey, when you can take a few walks and hit a couple home runs, the strikeouts maybe don't look as serious. But at some point, like, when are we going to see this offense start to at least just look like it was designed to look?
The pitching has covered up a lot with the lineup so far this year, and it is kind of in kind of scratch and fight and claw mode right now. And it looked like they were coming out of it, right? They drew so many walks beginning with the last homestand that really kind of offset the strikeouts. And the strikeouts were reduced in that kind of window of time. But we're seeing them spike again. I mean, right now you have three regulars, maybe four in your lineup that are riding like a 30% strikeout rate. Now, you don't notice it as much with Cal because, so what you just said, Mike, he's hit six bombs, right? But you notice it more with Garver. You notice it more with Polanco. You know, Julio's in that neighborhood as well, and he has one home run, obviously. I don't know. I asked Jerry about this the other day because I think it's important to have realistic expectations. Obviously, the Mariners put great time, energy, and resources in overhauling the lineup to avoid what is happening currently, which is frustrating. The Mariners were essentially the worst strikeout team in baseball last year. So what's the realistic hope? They're not going to go from the worst to the best in 1 year. That's just not going to happen. But the Mariners' hope is that it starts to slowly trickle to more of the middle. And they've obviously hurt their chances with that with a month of being the easiest team to strike out in baseball. My belief on it is this. The Mariners' starting pitchers, for example, they won't continue this level of elite dominance forever. It's physically impossible. In fact, the fact that they've done it to this level is already amazing. And on the opposite side of that coin, I believe that the names that I mentioned offensively won't be at this type of a strikeout rate, for example, forever, right? Like, everything's going to come to the mean at some point. And so I have a hard time thinking that, let's take Polanco and Garver, for example, that they're going to post the worst, like the outlier worst strikeout seasons of their career together this year for the Mariners. Now, could it happen? Yeah, anything can happen, but I don't think it will. And the process to get there is inside that clubhouse, and I know they're banging their head against the wall every day trying to figure it out because they're more of aware of it than any of us are, that's for sure. But it's got to change because they aren't hitting – I don't think they can hit enough home runs realistically to offset the number of strikeouts that they're currently on pace for.
What were the Vegas odds leaving spring training that Josh Rojas would lead the team with a 938 OPS in the month of April?
You know, Rojas has really opened up this year compared to when he came over last year. Like, it's a different guy. And I think we saw that, and you saw the emotion he had after those two leadoff home runs that he bookended the Arizona series with. Now, I'll chalk some of that to he's playing his former team, right? It's the Rojas Revenge Tour. So it does feel different, I'd have to imagine, when you do that against the club that traded you roughly 6 months ago or whatever it might have been. But when the Mariners made that trade with Arizona, Rojas held the deal up. That deal could have been executed, from what I've been told, significantly sooner had the Diamondbacks been willing to give up Rojas earlier. The Mariners were bullish. Like, we're not making this deal. We want Canzone. We want Bliss. But we also want Rojas. And if he's not in the deal won't happen. And the Diamondbacks finally gave in and included Rojas. The Mariners love his makeup. They love his presence in the clubhouse. They love the person, and they love the player. He's just been a steady player, by and large, over the course of his career, with versatility. And we've seen him at second, we've seen him at third, and now he's the couple of balls he hit against Arizona, I don't think he could hit a ball any better than that. They've needed him. They've needed him immensely, and thank goodness he's been able to fill the void at the top of the order against righties, and his production has been noticeable given the struggles by some others.
All right, last thing, and then we'll let you go, but and I hate to end it on this, but it's just so freaking important, and that is Julio. What is an expectation here for Julio, given that this just doesn't look like the guy that is the leader, the best player, the star of this team? He hasn't been terrible, and thankfully he's used all of his other skills to find ways to help the team. But when are we, what is it going to take to see Julio?
I mean, it is. We went through this last year, obviously. It is pretty amazing if you go glass half full that a player can be noticeably below expectation and still be a relatively average big league player. Like, that is amazing. For all of us in our normal jobs, we'd be fired if that were the case. But for Julio, it's like, okay, you're not close to what you can be, and yet you're still pretty average, which obviously the expectations for Julio is much greater than that. You know, for me, when I watch him, it's just a lot of ground balls again this year. And fortunately, by and large, he hits the ball hard enough, even when it's on the ground, that it can sneak through. But he hasn't hit the ball especially hard so far this year, certainly relative to what we know he can produce. We just, even when he was hot, right, even when he had that, whatever it was, a 13-some game stretch, you know, he had two barrels, which is like the premium type of contact that will more times than not lead to extra base hits, right? It's hit super hard and on a great trajectory that will lead to banging off the wall or splitting the gap or hopefully leaving the yard. And we obviously saw that in Arlington. But I'm sure that the effort right now is, how do we get Julio to get the ball in the air? When that happens, the offense ignites. And unfortunately, until that happens, the offense just can't be as good as you hope that it would be, because he is just too important, just like Acuña is too important for the Braves. He's just that good of a player when he's right.
Great stuff, as always. Enjoy a little day baseball today, Aaron. We appreciate it, and then have fun on the road. We'll talk to you soon.
Good talking to you guys.
All right, there you go. Aaron Goldsmith, who took some time with us yesterday. Much appreciated. He's a great guest, by the way. I really enjoy talking to Aaron, and we talked a little bit about Julio there, and what did he do? Three hits yesterday, including a double. Need more of that, right? I mean, like, that. Hopefully each time you see one of these games from Julio, you're like, okay, is this the moment that you start to see him break out? Because you know how talented he is. He's crazy, stupid talented. You've seen it before, so it's not like it's just talent. You know what he's capable of. He did it last year and 2 years ago. So you know it's in there, and you know it's probably going to come. You're just sitting here waiting like, geez, all right, come on, let's go, let's go. Where is it? Why do you look lost? Why don't you look like yourself? Why do you look jumpy at the plate? Why do you not look like Julio? Well, three hits yesterday. Hopefully that's one of those things that just unlocks him, makes him start feeling more comfortable, gives him that confidence, and then off he goes, because they need Julio to be Julio. All right, we will talk some more baseball, obviously, over the course of the day. I've got some suggestions to try to fix the struggling offense. We'll discuss those at 7:30 this morning. Nice. I did see, Justin, mm-hmm. Thank you for sending this over yesterday. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things that we get every year is the new numbers that the NFL rookies have chosen for themselves.
The kind of thing that I, in years past, would just kind of gloss over, like, right. Okay, they're numbers. And then once I heard and understood how much this means to you.
Yeah.
And how important it is to see what these people look like in jersey numbers.
Well, I think it affects us. It affects the way we view players.
Big way.
Right? Like, we're going to end up seeing Howell in this number 6 jersey, and it's going to kill him. Like, we're going to have a Howell conversation today because he's an interesting player, this and that. But I don't know how he's possibly going to succeed with the Seahawks while wearing the number 6.
For all the grief that we gave Russ for not having a guy in his ear telling him when and when not to.
Well, obviously Sam Howell is.
What is going on, Sam?
Yeah, he clearly doesn't have that advisor with him.
We don't do this.
Nobody can speak truth to power there, clearly, because he's making a gigantic mistake right off the bat. So let's take a look at what some of the rookies have here and what we think of some of these. Frank is in for more today, and he seems fascinated by this.
Frank, jersey numbers are a big deal.
Frank just straight up yawned in the middle of this. He's like, yeah, I'm out. Stretched. I don't care about this. All right, stretch, yawn, whatever. I stretched the truth into a yawn. There you go. All right, Frank, I'd like some of your reaction to these numbers. Tell me what you think.
Hit me.
I will give you my thoughts as well, but I'm curious. Byron Murphy, Seahawks first pick, number 16, defensive tackle, 300-pound weight room freak. He's going to wear number 91. How do we feel about 91?
If you think of it like highway speed, that's like pretty fast. You know?
Interesting
pretty,
way to think about that.
Pretty real.
Yeah.
I have considered that. Yeah. 91. I am okay with this one. Kind of like to
do
see.
You have do you have a range for the position? Should the position be
Look,
within...
he's going to play inside on defense. So 90s is definitely a fairly normal range for him to be. Kind of like to see an even number on him.
Even number on Byron Murphy?
Kind of like to see an even number.
Why is that?
Fits him. Okay. You're strong. You're fast. You're quick. Right. You're going to beat people to the punch. Kind of going to need an even number. I don't love the one on there. All right. Next up is Christian Haynes, big guard, with the big belly button, right? Talked about that earlier this week.
That's the one Brock said put a cantaloupe in?
Yeah, and cantaloupe was an exaggeration. But a lime, you might be able to fit a lime in there. Christian Haynes is going to wear number 64.
Okay. That's a good number.
It is, right?
Yeah.
Perfect for a guard. Sweezy. You want to wear 64, you can play guard for me. Like, that is a good guard number. 6 and 4 add up to 10. Like, there's a roundness to it, to the 6 as well, which is going to fit his body type. Like, I'm into that.
Okay.
Tyrese Knight, the linebacker out of UTEP, is going to wear number 48.
Pretty good. Also right? Pretty good.
It's a good-looking number. It's not a 50s number. That's sort of the cool thing now for linebackers to not wear things in the 50s. Like, look at me, I'm in the 40s. But I like it. It's sort of a fullback number, and I like the idea of a middle linebacker wearing a fullback number.
Not what he wore in college.
Yeah, so I'm into 48. A.J. Barner, the tight end, going to wear a very traditional 88.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect for a tight end.
I mean, that's just
that's
a tight end
that's
number.
That's a tight end number.
Right, you're a tight end.
That's the only number the tight ends to wear.
Right.
Take your word for it.
Yeah, yeah. You got to go. 88's a good number. I like that. All right. Then you got your two corners. Nehemiah Pritchett is going to wear 28. DJ James is going to wear 29.
Fine.
Like, kind of okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, like no issues, whatever. Like, I like 28 more than 29, not going to lie. I think it's just a better. Maybe I'm just into the even numbers in general, but I think I like 28 more than 29, which is probably going to give Pritchett an edge over James in a competition this year. Then you got Satoa Laomea, the other guard. He's going to wear number 63. Issues? 64 anybody?
Is so much better. I didn't 64 think I was is be better.
But I'm going to tell you something.
Life.
I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to clue you into something. While 64 is perfect round guard number, 63 is a little tougher. 63's got a little bit more edge to it. 63 has a little more barroom brawl scrappiness to it.
Yep. I can see that.
And maybe it's because you're feeling inferior. I don't know what it is, but 63, I like that for Laomea. And then Michael Jarrell is number 65. That one's fine. Some other people disagreeing, saying 91 is great. Odd numbers look faster. Some, like 11, sure, absolutely. 11 looks very fast. 17 could look quick. Yeah. 19 even
21
times.
Looks fast.
Yeah, but I don't know whether I would put 91. Look, on the edge, 91 looks quick. In the middle, 91 just doesn't fit for me. So that's just my thought.
He was number 90 in college.
So I like that. 90, I like 90. You know what I would have liked for an odd number is 95. You want to go 95 up the middle? I think you've really got something.
Lightning McQueen? 95.
Huh?
Lightning McQueen? 95.
Like Lightning McQueen.
Just like Lightning McQueen. Yeah,
that's exactly
what he was getting to.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Frank, I knew you would. I knew this would be your kind of segment.
My pleasure.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Glad you're here this week. Brock's in next. We'll talk about, I don't know, something great. Mike, it's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.